Now, from the left coast to the D.C. Beltway, covering the topics you love to hate and hate to miss, it's the Silk or Joe Show.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome to the Silk or Joe Show. This weekend, co-host Joe, this Labor Day weekend, co-host Joe, struggling with the microphone. The stand got caught on a cord, and I just noticed that. Anyway, Silk or Joe Show comes to you courtesy of the Main Street Radio Network. So I want to thank the Main Street Radio Network for allowing this program to exist, making sure that we have the money to keep it coming, and that gets more and more heartfelt every day. Anyway, we can be found at mainstreetradionetwork.com. We don't have our own website. We're on Main Street Radio Network's website, Silk or Joe Show under there. You can find podcasts for the program up there, and you can find us on social media too, Main Street Radio Network's pages on Facebook and Wimkin, also X at Main Street Radio, and then Getter, GETTR.com at Silk or Joe Show, where I will post occasionally if I remember to. And we also can, if I happen to guest host for the Al Nathan Show, you're more likely to find out about it by following X at Al Nathan or the Main Street Radio Network's Facebook or X pages. So, that's worth following just for that. And that's it for the social media stuff. We do want to thank the Salem Radio Network for distributing the show. And if you're curious about the Al Nathan Show, that's also on mainstreetradionetwork.com and alannathan.com. He's got his own separate website because he was his own separate entity, whereas the Silk or Joe Show has been with the Main Street Radio Network the entirety of its existence. Unlike Alan, who has 12 years independent of it. I'm turning my monitor here so that I don't have to side-eye my notes here about what I'm talking about. As we get into the topic, of course, you've all heard the tragic mass shooting, a bunch of Catholic kids over in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Now, I do want to just emphasize how tragic all this is before getting right into some of the issues around what happened here. And the media and the deep state, they seem to be have been trying to hide certain aspects of this mass shooting. Gee, I gotta wonder why, according to anonymous government sources. Social media sites started trying to scrub the shooter's stuff pretty quick. I mean quick, like minutes after the identity was known. Which is interesting, because how did the alternate media grab it before the mainstream media with its army of journalists? And maybe the folks trying to cover this up move too fast for the mainstream folks and are designed to counter them, but not the rapid response alternate media, or perhaps the mainstream media just didn't want to touch it to begin with. I mean, heck, I just saw in my local news they had a quick little blurb about it, and they kept calling the shooter a he, which, it's kind of funny. I've seen some conservatives out there blasting the liberal media for referring to the shooter as a she, making sure to use the proper pronouns and all that. But then I got my local media here, which is actually left-leaning, trying to hide any trans involvement whatsoever by just calling it a he, and then playing a quick clip of the mayor of Minneapolis blasting the use of guns and whatnot, and then going into the tragedy real quick. Just trying to skew the narrative, change the narrative a bit, right? To be about guns as opposed to, a trans person going insane yet again. So, and also just how quickly, again, the stuff on social media was scrubbed. Whenever they can blame a shooting on a white supremacist, the media gets plenty of time to comb through their social media stuff and figure things out. They might even get to see their manifesto. But all this was scrubbed pretty quick. Another thing, too, the shooter regretted being trans, felt it was a mistake despite being rushed into it by parents in an affirming community, heck, as early as the age of 17. And when that happened, of course, all that knowledge comes out. What does the mayor do? Tax anyone praying for the Catholic victims of an alleged devil worshiper, and then said this attack was caused by transphobia, almost, in the way some of his statements look. And the church, by the way, did ask for prayer, contrary to what the victim-blaming leftist mayor is saying. He's not fringe, by the way. He is the Democrat Party. The lieutenant governor of Minnesota once actually posed for cameras in a shirt showing a knife that read, "Protect Trans Kids." And it seems that this shooter, based on the manifesto and certain other notes, was doing just that, as the Democrat lieutenant governor of Minnesota wanted. Now, anyone who's followed Andy Ngo, that is Andy NGO, that's how you spell the guy's last name. He's not a non-governmental organization, although I guess as a journalist kind of is, maybe as a private journal, as an independent journalist, he kind of is an organization. But yeah, it's NGO, as in non-governmental organization. That's his last name, Andy NGO. His reporting knows, anyone who's been following his reporting knows about how much violence we've seen from the trans community. I mean, heck, he's been threatened, his life has been threatened plenty of times by them, and frequently he will, you know, go scroll through social media and pull up pictures of trans folks proudly standing next to rifles, trans militia groups showing off their weapons, because they are expecting to go and start killing normal people in order to defend their whatever delusions they have and mental illnesses they have. And he's followed another trans murder cult with nationwide members. Allegedly, this shooter now had ties to a different but similar group. And liberal politicians are telling them that, yes, murder is good. I mean, gee whiz, again, look at what that lieutenant governor of Minnesota was posing with. A shirt that depicts a knife saying, protect trans kids. Come on. What could the message be other than that? But then also you have the messaging from liberal politicians that just tell them that get rid of your opponents or whatever. There is a trans genocide by the fascist. Get rid of the fascist. It's okay to punch a Nazi. All that stuff. So there is definitely top-down issues going on here as far as the party stirring up paranoia in the fringe group that's already, you know, kind of mentally ill to begin with. Just a holistic experience, qualitative experience on my part. I've met a few trans folks. Precisely one of them was normal. It was just some older dude who was going through a midlife crisis, pretty much. That's it. The rest of them had something. Anyway, so another issue, too, though, is just a lot of red flags seem to have been missed with this shooter. How do you get $1,000 worth of weapons, at the very least, assuming everything was bought used, secondhand, third hand, whatever? Because if it was new, it'd be at least $1,500. And that's not counting ammunition either. Where did this person get the money for that? And apparently these are recent acquisitions on their part. So where'd all that money come from, right? It's kind of peculiar how these people suddenly get funding for these things when maybe they haven't had a job ever or held down a job long enough. Certainly they aren't saving up their nickels and dimes for this sort of thing. I mean, the kind of mental illnesses involved here don't really give way to planning ahead. Again, something I know from first-hand experience. Here's a headline, though, from The Right Scoop. Gotta keep trucking along here. Independent school leaders begged Governor Waltz for help securing their schools 2 years ago. Everyone from Waltz, the governor, on down to city leaders vote for security for themselves, but schools are gun-free zones. The Democrats in D.C. had fences and machine guns set up to guard themselves, but not a dime for defending schools. In fact, every town, one of the anti-gun groups, considers it wonderful that schools have no armed presence. They praise states where school staff aren't allowed to be armed to protect the students. They have nothing calling for Democrat politicians to be just as unprotected, though. Meanwhile, the trans shooter actually in the manifesto were YouTube video somewhere, and they picked the school because it was a gun-free zone. It's like Democrats are creating easy targets so they can grab headlines to advocate for banning your right to protect yourself. Is it any wonder we might think they'd let an insane transgender buy guns, hoping something like this would happen? No wonder the anti-gun intel community or social media people or whoever were so quick to hide the shooter's social media posts. Trans? Hide it. Free Palestine nut? Hide it. Pick gun-free zone because it was gun-free? Hide it. Wrote kill Donald Trump on a gun? Hide it. I mean, ABC News, they just reported that Trump's name was written on the guns, not that it was a threat in the form of a threat against him, leaving viewers to think the shooter was a Trump supporter. Meanwhile, Democrats came out demanding gun control because, well, of course. Was it the fact that the Democrat politicians have called Trump a Nazi, said he illegally occupies the White House, said he's a fascist, said there is a genocide against the trans community, said that they need to fight in the streets, nothing to do with the suicidal tendencies and warped minds of those who are coerced into transitioning and regretted, such as this shooter? None of that had anything to do with it. It's the gun. That was the blame. Pay no attention to the rest. Gavin Newsom blamed the GOP for not taking action on gun control in a Democrat state that the Democrat vice presidential candidate governors, the same state where Democrats found time to add pedophilia to the list of sexual preferences covered in its laws about such things, didn't bother to also pass an assault weapons ban like Democrats want. But they do have laws about these sorts of things, about guns. in Minnesota, it's required to have a 30-day wait for the AR that the shooter used. You would need a permit to buy the handgun that the shooter had. There are red flag laws all over the place. So what, the parents didn't see? There's a picture that the shooter posted on social media of a target with Jesus' face on it. What, the kid's parents didn't see that and say something about it? Didn't see them stop their kids stockpiling all these weapons, didn't question it? Didn't see the writing on all these weapons and question it? I don't know about you, if I had guns like that in my house, you bet bottom dollar my parents would know about it, and they might have seen a time or two, especially if I'm taking the time to write all that stuff on there, because that person had colored all over the darn things with writing. But yeah, that's four different things, and also the shooting was in a gun-free zone, so that's four different things right there Democrats tell us would stop shootings that failed. So how did this not get through the system unless someone was refusing to report them for fear of being transphobic? I mean, remember, that mass shooting that got David Hogue's career started happened because the Broward County, Florida schools ignored all sorts of red flags. So really, it does seem like a failure of Democrat legislation here, and almost a deliberate one. More Silker Joshua after this break.
Hi, this is Anna D'Souza, television host and lifestyle expert. If you're still scrambling to get ready for back to school, don't worry. You can still get it all done without the stress. I like to keep it simple. One trip, one store, and a short list. Target makes it so easy. Their 20 for $20 list covers all the teacher must-haves, pencils, glue, scissors, crayons, notebooks, all in one stop. For lunches, parents can grab good and gather favorites like organic applesauce pouches, fruit strips, yogurt pouches, sun butter sandwiches, and fresh mandarins. Everything is easy to pack, budget-friendly, and kid-approved. First day outfits are easy with Cat and Jack mix-and-match staples and a great backpack like the Champion Estate. And for older students heading to college, Target's Room Essentials line has everything from shower caddies and towels to a storage ottoman and even a cute mug for their morning coffee. Head to your nearest Target store or visit Target.com or the Target app to find all the great ways to save and check out Target Circle for additional details.
Each day, more than 1,000 children across the world are diagnosed with cancer. And despite it being the leading cause of death by disease among children in the United States, many of today's standard treatments were approved more than 30 years ago. That's exactly why Northwestern Mutual has made it our mission to bring attention to this cause. We declare September 4th as Golden Moments Day, a day of national recognition across the United States to honor stories of resilience, community impact, and breakthroughs in research and treatments that will light the way to a brighter future. To reinforce our commitment, for each new financial plan delivered to prospective clients in September, the Northwestern Mutual Foundation will donate $100 to Alex's Lemonade Stand Foundation, up to $2 million. That would fund 40,000 hours of research. But there is still work to be done. Help us make a lasting impact this September. I invite you to join us in our mission to find better treatments and cures for childhood cancer. Visit NorthwesternMutual.com to find an advisor near you.
What I know about courage, I learned from my adoptive mom. She said sometimes you just gotta hold on and know we'll get through this.
Mom, we are so high up. Hold my hand.
No, you hold my hand.
Here we go.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more.
I learned patience from my adoptive dad. All he had to say was,
"Hey, you got this. Just breathe." Hey, we're pretty good.
Yeah.
Might have to start a band.
I got it.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
The mission of Paralyzed Veterans of America is clear. Accessibility. Veterans who have served and sacrificed the best of themselves deserve access to the best our country has to offer. Access to meaningful employment. Access to the veterans' benefits they've earned. Accessible homes and vehicles. And access to every part of their communities. With PVA staff working inside VA hospitals, no other veterans organization has provided more real-time, ongoing support for paralyzed veterans and their families. PVA is proud to serve veterans across all branches, all generations, and all conflicts. Our nation's heroes fought for your independence. Join PVA in fighting for theirs at pva.org.
Welcome back to the Silker Joe Show, everybody. Co-host Joe with you all here this weekend. Thank you for tuning in. We are joined for this segment by Sarah McLaughlin. She is senior scholar at the Foundation for Individual Rights and Expression and author of the recently released book, Authoritarians in the Academy. Her writings have appeared in outlets such as MSNBC, The Guardian, and The Los Angeles Times, though I don't think any of them published her book in full. Sarah McLaughlin, happy to have you on the show. How are you today?
Hi, thanks so much for having me. I'm doing great.
Glad to have you. So tell us about this book, Authoritarians in the Academy.
Absolutely. So my book covers the ways that higher education has been influenced and in some ways directly censored by authoritarian governments overseas, and what it means for higher education to have close ties with countries that aggressively censor and silence their critics all around the world. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, now listeners to this show or to the Al Nathan show, which sometimes I guest host, would have heard about at least China getting involved with this, with the Confucius Institutes and stuff like that that they have going on. Mm-hmm. But it's not just China that's doing it, is it?
No, universities have been also building out ties with Gulf states, especially Qatar and the UAE, and they've expanded into these countries with satellite campuses. And while these campuses offer some good opportunities, they also directly link American universities with these governments, and in some ways give governments like the Qatari government censorship power over what happens on these campuses. And there are some high-profile universities like Northwestern and Georgetown who have had disturbing censorship controversies that have taken place at these campuses. And it brings up a difficult but important question of, who's in charge at these campuses? Do the universities get to make the rules, or are foreign governments sort of setting the tone for what can be said and what are ultimately campuses run by American universities?
And even though some of these, even though you mentioned the campuses overseas, just how much of that, though, creeps back to the campuses in the U.S.? You know, students over there transfer over here, take that mindset with them, or even professors from over there transfer over here, take some of that mindset with them.
Absolutely. It's especially, the Chinese government that has the most sway over what happens directly on campuses here in the United States. And there are a lot of different ways that that happens. One of those ways is in some part from international students who come here from China, for example, and they find that the Chinese government has followed them here to a certain extent. I've heard from students who have been surveilled. They've been threatened by the Chinese government while here in the United States. And that's pretty disturbing, but what's just as bad in some ways is that these students fear that they can't rely on their university to defend their rights because perhaps their university might have close financial ties with the very government that is violating their rights. So I think, that's just one of the ways that comes here. There's also been incidents where Chinese consulates here in the United States have attempted to contact university presidents and leadership and tell them, I don't want you to have this Tibetan speaker or this Taiwanese speaker on your campus. I want you to do something about it. So there have, in some cases, even been direct requests from the Chinese government to American universities to silence speech, which, I think for the most part, universities have been able to reject, but not in every case. And as you mentioned earlier, Confucius Institutes have played a role too. Universities have perhaps not done their due diligence in considering whether it's wise to accept money that's ultimately sourced directly from the Chinese government. But at least in the case of these Confucius Institutes, those have mostly fallen out of favor here in the United States. But that doesn't mean that influence from the Chinese government has dissipated.
Yeah, and for all the people who's, you know, it's funny because the professors out there, when they talk about anti-climate change data and say, well, follow the money, this study might have been funded by big oil or whatever. Well, let's follow the money. Who's funding you guys? You know, you're getting your money from China or from the Gulf states. What, you know, why wouldn't we think that you're all getting something out of it? How can they kind of, is there any way they can get rid of this kind of perception around them, or better yet, get rid of this ability for these other countries to have influence over them?
Well, I think at minimum, if they want to address this perception, they should be more transparent about, A, what kind of funding they're getting in the first place. In the past couple of decades, there has been, I think, you know, billions of dollars in unreported foreign funds that have come into American universities. So that alone, that lack of transparency, I think, has contributed to the perception that universities are not being totally honest and trustworthy. And I think they also need should consider, you know, making the terms of their grants and agreements with these foreign powers, making them public so people can really understand exactly what the terms are. And, you know, in some ways that could even help universities. They could say, look, we're being very public and transparent, and there's nothing to see here. But in some of the cases with the Confucius Institutes, there were a few that ultimately did have troubling provisions in their contractual agreements with Confucius Institutes. And what was even more worrying was how few of them made any recognition or protection for academic freedom. And that's ultimately what we want here. We want to ensure that we have as many protections as possible in place if universities are going to pursue this kind of funding from overseas.
Yeah, and use that funding to train our students to, what, undermine the U.S. and end up promoting what these overseas folks are trying to do. You know, it's kind of, you know, how did this all, like, get, like, what made the university sort of just open to this kind of funding and changing themselves to accept the funding? I thought these institutions of higher learning, you know, prided themselves on being independent, bastions of free speech, et cetera, et cetera. But then they're like, oh, you're going to give us some money? We'll take it. How did that kind of start where they started altering themselves just for the money?
Well, I think that's, you know, essentially one of the biggest issues underlying here is that universities have started to act more like institutions with corporate concerns and bureaucratic concerns than ones who prioritize their values over those things. So I think in some ways you can understand it just in the terms of how any other large global corporation would act. Because we have seen this with in plenty of industries, you know, in fashion and tech, you know, and even some global sporting, we have seen that there is, you know, many industries are willing to exchange stated values for corporate gain. And so the more that we see our universities act like corporate bodies, the more we're going to see them make exactly those kinds of trade-offs. And unfortunately, here, I think the trade-offs are, you know, not necessarily, you know, what's happening in the fashion industry, but the trade-off might be how well does the general public understand the world we live in? Because these are the institutions that we rely on to help us, you know, understand, research, study the world that we live in. So, you know, what trade-offs universities engage in ultimately have very serious and widespread effects for the rest of society.
Well, speaking of corporatization, we got less than a minute left here. So where can our listeners find a copy of your book that talks about all this, Authoritarians in the Academy?
Yeah, it's available on Amazon, available to booksellers, and with my publisher, Johns Hopkins University Press. That's Authoritarians in the Academy.
All right. Well, Sarah McLaughlin, appreciate you being on the Silk or Joe show to talk about all this. Listeners, you can go check out the book again, Authoritarians in the Academy. And we've got more Silk or Joe show coming up after this break.
Research shows a continued decline in childhood vaccines over the past several school years. That and the resurgence of measles across the U.S. has put public health officials and family physicians on high alert. Medical professionals say it's understandable to have questions about vaccines, and if you do, ask. Dr. Diana Howard with the American Academy of Family Physicians.
Timely vaccinations are essential to protect families, neighbors, and loved ones, especially as the school year begins. Your family physician is a trusted place to get the answers and support you need when it comes to vaccines. The American Academy of Family Physicians wants you to know, vaccines work. They are safe, effective, and save lives. Family physicians can help you make sure the whole family is up to date on their vaccinations and protected from preventable diseases, especially before school starts. And it's understandable to have questions. Your doctor wants you to be an advocate for yourself and your loved ones. So take those questions to your next appointment.
For more information, visit familydoctor.org.
Gen Z is connected and isolated, meaning they're connected with their phones and devices, but they're expressing levels of feelings of isolation and loneliness at the same time. And so this is leading them down a path of asking some of life's big questions, like why am I here and what really matters? And so that's taking them down a path of spirituality. And what I found as a chaplain is that when our soldiers find faith, they find the strength to face just about anything in their life. And that's why this conversation is so important. And for example, spiritually, when a soldier knows their why, it's going to help them thrive in every aspect of their life. In a large part, that's why spirituality is so important. Visit GoArmy.com. It's more than just a website. It's a front door to join a mission that's greater than just yourself. It's an opportunity to perhaps leave a lasting legacy. And in the words of the Army, become all that you can be.
Hi, it's Practical Polly's radio show. If you're just figuring out that healthier cooking oils are better than solid fats, you may be asking, now what am I going to do with all these tubs of lard? Ever had one of those moments when your favorite skinny jeans feel too tightly tailored? Generously apply lard to your hips and thighs and those fancy pants will slide on like a dream. Or here's a family-friendly idea. How about making your yard into a lard fun park? Frost your driveway with a nice thick coating and give those kiddos a downhill thrill no matter what time of year. Having a bad hair day? Yep. A little lump of lard can tame your flyaways in a jiffy. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste or to your waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Now that's a tip worth keeping for life. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
Steven.
Who said that?
Me, down here.
What are you, a yellow booger?
I'm a banana slug, Steven.
Well, what are you doing in my room?
I'm your sense of adventure. Don't you remember me? Don't you know that we miss you?
Miss me? Who misses me?
You know, all your friends in the forest. The trees, the pond, that little fort that you made out of branches. We all miss you.
Mom took me to the forest last year.
I'm a slug, Steven. It took me a long time to get here.
Oh, I guess that makes sense.
The forest is not that far away. Have an adventure today. I'm sure your mom would take you.
You're right. I should get out. I want to have fun. Play in puddles, catch frogs, and climb trees. Hey, Mom!
Yeah, hon?
Steven! What is that in your hand?
It's my sense of adventure, Mom. It's telling me we need to get out of the house and have some fun in nature today.
Come to the forest where the more adventurous you lives. Check out discovertheforest.org for cool places nearby. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
There are gun laws in Minneapolis, in Minnesota, that other states don't have, but there are some things that could still be done. Is that something that you hope people in the legislature have a will to do at this point in time?
Why is it so easy to get a gun? You know, this has gone down in other countries, and they say, you know what, we're not
going to allow this anymore. We don't want this to happen anymore. We're going to do something about it. It's got to be out of love for our kids.
It's just happened this morning, and there has already been sort of some effort, which I think is so sick and disgusting, to weaponize some of the details, even if we don't know a lot at this point in time. The individual possibly being trans, about the individual possibly having negative things to say about Trump. What do you do as a leader of your city to prevent details from being weaponized and using this to blame something other than the guns?
People will think of the conclusion that they want to get to, and then they'll like reverse manufacture the facts that they want to hear to get to that end point.
Everybody, what you just heard was MSNBC's Jen Psaki, who used to be with the Biden administration as their White House comms director. Don't know why she quit. She was better than the one they replaced her with, which isn't saying much. And she was talking with the Democrat mayor of Minneapolis, Jacob Fry, and good old Fry was out there trying to defend the idea that we need to get some gun control in here fast, and Jen was like, yes, let's exploit this tragedy for gun control. But then they both started blasting people for exploiting the tragedy for anything except gun control. And they said sick and disgusting was what Jen Psaki said. It's sick and disgusting people are weaponizing this tragedy. And then that they had just finished weaponizing the tragedy to advocate for gun control, when there are plenty of other solutions that will work just as well, such as, oh, I don't know, maybe not having schools as a gun-free zone, because as the shooter noted in their manifesto, that they picked that school because it is a gun-free zone. How about that? No, I'm not going to talk about that. We're just going to try and ban more guns, because, like I said in the opening segment, it's almost like these people want the schools to be gun-free zones. It's sort of like, you know, what's the thinking behind this legislation? I would like to know. You know, they say we got to do something for the sake of the children. Well, why aren't you protecting the schools? Why are they open targets? I don't get this. These leaders, as I said in the opening segment as well, there was a headline from the Right Scoop about how leaders had gone to the city for protection before, or to this, no, it was to Governor Waltz himself. The a bunch of non-public schools, independent schools, went to the governor to ask for some funding for protection. He said, no, you're not getting any funding for protection. Screw you. You're on your own. You're going to be gun-free zones, and we're going to let shooters come and shoot you up, which is what happened. And what's the solution we're getting from MSNBC? Oh, we got to ban the guns. We can't do anything to protect the kids. Coming from, let's see, how much security do you think is at the MSNBC headquarters? Huh? You think they just let anyone in with a firearm off the street, or you think that they might actually stop you before getting in? How about the Minneapolis mayor? How much security is around that guy? You think he's walking the streets in the middle of the night without any kind of protection? You think he's sitting there in the governor's in the mayor's mansion or the city hall with no protection? Of course not. But they expect the kids to be unprotected in gun-free zones. And that's somehow protecting them. And you're a monster if you point this out. You're a monster if you demand that maybe someone actually try to protect the kids instead of banning everyone else from owning guns. And then again, we get to the point of how they just seem to be letting these shootings happen, not just because they're not protecting the schools, but because egregious red flags are being ignored. Minnesota has red flag laws. At some point, someone could have noticed that maybe this person who's maybe the kid's parents could have noticed how they drew all over the firearms before taking all this stuff. Maybe they noticed that their kid started buying up all these firearms in the first place. Maybe they could have noticed that the kid was having targets with Jesus's face pasted on them at the shooting range. Maybe someone at the shooting range could have noticed that. There's a lot of red flags here. I mean, I would be uncomfortable, honestly, if someone had like Biden's face taped to a target if they were shooting it at the range. In fact, stuff like that's not even allowed, I don't think, at the ranges around where I'm at. And you know, some of them are pretty conservative too. So like, someone somewhere dropped the ball seriously on this, and yet everyone else except the guns is everyone else is getting off scot-free. It's just the guns that have to be blamed for it, right? As they said on MSNBC, you gotta blame the guns. You can't blame anything else. It's sick and disgusting that anyone's blaming anything except the guns. Ban the guns. You know, what about the stuff that led to this, right? What about the stuff in this kid's history? The woke progressive nonsense that got them to this point, according to the manifesto itself. Now, of course, they didn't, you know, they indicated this is what led to it, but they didn't, like, blame it or anything. So just lacked that self-awareness. But you can tell from that, no wonder the media doesn't want you to cover it or think about the shooter being trans either, which is interesting, too. That's another thing. How dare you point out the person's identity when anytime it's a white mass shooter, they're out there saying that it's a reflection upon the white race being violent savages. MSNBC itself has anchors on there who very much like to take note of that when it's a white mass shooter, how terrible it is that the white people are so evil or whatever, that they do these kinds of things. And of course, we ignore the other mass shootings that go on, such as the ones that led to Trump needing to occupy D.C. in the first place, or the ones that go on in Chicago like every flipping weekend that white people have nothing to do with. Although, you know, it used to be a blind spot on the left where they would say if it's a trans person or a non-white, you just ignore the race and you blame the gun. But if it's a white person, you blame all the white people. MSNBC, CNN, they've all done that. So very hypocritical for Jen Psaki to find it sick and disgusting when she literally has done the exact same thing. But I mean, if it advances the Democrat Party narrative, it's pure and holy as opposed to this. But anyway, it's now creeping over to Fox News, though. As if we could have clip number two, please, about from Fox News.
Our system is reactive. Something bad happens, we react to it. And what people are crying for now is how can we prevent this? How can we stop it? And the only way to stop it is to identify the shooter ahead of time or keep the weapons out of their hands. And so we're going to have a conversation of freedom versus protecting children. I mean, how many school shootings does it take before we're going to have a conversation about keeping firearms out? It's always a young white male, almost always. I mean, did anyone this morning think, I wonder if that was a female? Did any of y'all think that? I mean, there's been one school shooting involving a female.
Tennessee.
Yeah, Tennessee. But other than that, it is usually young white males.
I think he's narrowed down the definitions of the shootings that we're looking at here. The mass shootings that I've seen a lot of lately, it's not a white male. The guy who went up to the NFL headquarters and missed the headquarters and went somewhere else. According to CNN, he was a white male, but everyone else reported that he was a black man. Then you have, what was it, that parade last year or whatever, where there was a mass shooting and it was just a gang thing that went into the public. But nope, we're just focusing like the rest of the media. Trey Gowdy here, former congressman, Fox News host, is just focusing on here on these school shootings, saying, oh, it's the white people thing to do the school shootings. Oh, therefore, we're going to focus solely on that. And he's talking about banning the guns, too. But again, he isn't advocating for protecting the schools to have them as naked targets, gun-free zones, right? You know, you have to be the one who pays, not, you know, just get some security for the school. No, no, no. You have to lose your ability to have a firearm instead of securing the schools the way we secure Congress, something that Gowdy would know about having been a congressman himself. Although, you know, it's looking a lot like, in retrospect, I've had this thought before a few times that maybe he was full of hot air. Boy, he was really good, though, 10 years ago. You know, if you listened to the Al Nathan show 10 years ago, often had clips of him talking. Boy, he was a good talker back then. Didn't get anything done, but boy, was he a good talker, wasn't he? Not anymore. Don't like what the noise coming out of his mouth is. not after that clip, where, oh, you gotta lose your gun rights now because we can't bother protecting the kids. We just gotta make sure that you can't protect yourself. Kind of going in the opposite direction here, and it's not going to do any good because it's not really the guns that were responsible for this. There would have been something else. It would have been hopping into a car and running them over because this person was out to kill. You think that not having a gun is going to stop them from killing a bunch of children? Children are, well, that would have been a very flip remark to make. The point is, it's something to do with what's going through these people's heads, and banning guns just means you're not protected from them. That's all it means. Doesn't help at all. It hurts, if anything. The solution, again, would be do something to protect the schools, but you're not hearing that. You're hearing ban all the guns. Now you're hearing it from both sides. You're hearing it from Fox News, from a once-respected Republican congressman. You're hearing ban the guns. And boy, the left liberal media has run wild with this, with Gowdy's statement there. Oh, even Fox News now is tired of assault weapons. We got to ban them. And, you know, it's almost made to order. Because leading up to this shooting, I saw a lot of ads on YouTube from the Sandy Hook folks about some anti-gun group that spawned from the Sandy Hook parents, telling us we got to ban the assault weapons. And now you have this happen, and you have this attempt to scrub on social media who was actually responsible, what their thinking was, what their feeling was, and this attempt by ABC News that I mentioned in the opening segment to spin it as possibly a Trump supporter doing it. And now you have Fox News saying, oh, we got to ban the guns as well. You know, it's starting to look like a coordinated effort here, and that goes across this really big rise in mass shootings since Trump took office. One might say it's almost orchestrated. More Silk or Joshua after this break.
Burgers and hot dogs may headline the grill, but baked beans are making a strong showing at summer cookouts. Chef James Brissione has more.
Baked beans are incredibly versatile. I use them in hamburger bakes, layer them into hot dogs with cheese, and even stuff them into grilled chili rellenos. They bring big flavor with little effort.
Chef's chili relleno recipe starts with poblano peppers stuffed with Bush's vegetarian baked beans, onions, jalapenos, and red bell pepper. For something heartier, hamburger baked beans combine seasoned ground beef with Bush's original baked beans.
That chili relleno dish is one of my favorites. It's easy to prep, great for vegetarian or gluten-free guests, and the beans add that smoky, savory bite that works with anything else on the plate.
Another go-to for feeding a crowd is baked bean and cheese hot dogs. Made with Bush's brown sugar hickory baked beans, onions, and cheddar. Bush's baked beans varieties include original, brown sugar hickory, vegetarian, zero sugar added, and more. Visit bushbeans.com.
Respiratory syncytial virus, or RSV, is known for affecting infants and young children. But the reality is that adults between 50 and 74 years of age with certain risk factors, or 75 or older, are at increased risk for severe infection. Dr. Candace Robinson from GSK has more.
Because the immune system weakens with age, the risk of severe RSV increases for older adults. If you have certain chronic conditions such as heart disease, COPD, complicated diabetes, or asthma, you're at an increased risk of becoming severely ill from RSV. And RSV can also cause exacerbations of certain medical conditions.
Approximately 177,000 adults 65 and older are hospitalized due to RSV annually.
The CDC recommends a single RSV vaccine dose for adults between 50 and 74 years of age with certain risk factors, or 75 or older to help protect against RSV.
For more information on RSV, talk to your local pharmacist and visit easyvax.com for more information about how to find vaccines available near you.
This back to school, you don't have to overspend to make it famous. Famous Footwear has the newest styles your family loves. From Jordan to Crocs, Adidas to Nike, Converse, New Balance, Birkenstock, and more. Always at a great value. Need the perfect fit? Their in-store fit experts have you covered. With over 830 stores nationwide and Famous.com, back-to-school shopping has never been easier or more stylish. Famous Footwear, the brands you love, the value you deserve.
There's nothing worse than losing cell service while exploring the great outdoors, but that's changing fast. T-Mobile is bringing coverage to the most remote parts of the country with T-Satellite with Starlink, reaching over 500,000 square miles where towers can't, thanks to over 650 satellites already in orbit. Over a million messages have already been sent in hard-to-reach areas from national parks to remote trails. King of Phillips, travel expert.
As someone who's constantly off the beaten path, this changes everything. Now I can stay connected, even deep in the mountains or deserts.
For more information, visit T-Mobile.com, sponsored by T-Mobile.
My name is Judy Teeter, and I'm the mother of three boys. My youngest, Joe, was a great kid. He loved sports, music, and his youth group. One day, Joe asked me to drive him to an after-school event, which was about a mile from our home. I was driving through a green light when a car in cross traffic ran a red light and drove right into the side of our car, killing Joe. The driver was talking on her phone, so she never even saw the red light. She was so absorbed in her phone call. Before the crash, I didn't realize just talking on a cell phone while driving was so dangerous. Now it's something I think about every day. According to the National Safety Council, about 1 in 4 car crashes involves a cell phone. Hands-free is no safer. When you're behind the wheel, put away your phone. For Joe and for the thousands of needless deaths every year. Remember, there is no safe way to talk on a cell phone while driving. Find out more at nsc.org/callskill.
I'm Ben Affleck, and I want to thank you for joining me and supporting Paralyzed Veterans of America. Our vets need you.
I'm a quadriplegic. I'm definitely at risk with my diminished lung capacity.
I have MS.
I'm in a wheelchair and I can't leave the house because I have a compromised immune system.
I'm very concerned about, would there be a bed for me? Would there be a ventilator for me? Would I be able to survive something?
It's just heavy. You know, it's a heavy moment. This is a war. This really is.
Our veterans fought for us. Let's fight for them.
I am so grateful for the PVA. They're making sure that we have all of the food and supplies that we need right now.
We all gotta help each other right now. We can't get through this by ourselves.
It's with profound gratitude that you're gonna be saving our lives.
To find out how you can help, please go to helppva.org. That's helppva.org.
Welcome back to the Silk or Joe Show, everybody. Co-host Joe with you all here today. Thank you for sticking with us through this hour of the program. Last segment here, and we are joined for it by Reggie Littlejohn, covering a topic that may have slipped through the headlines here because it happened all the way back in May. She is founder and president of Women's Rights Without Frontiers, co-chair of Stop Vax Passports Task Force, and co-founder of the Sovereignty Coalition. Reggie Littlejohn, always happy to talk with you. How are you today?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. So the World Health Organization, they adopted a new pandemic treaty back on May 20th. And, you know, they wanted to do a step towards safety and equity, I guess, whatever equity has to do with health care, but stopping pandemics. But there seems to, as usual with anything the World Health Organization does, there's a little bit of a power grab going on in here. What is it?
Well, there are many aspects of this that would constitute power grabs. The one that I'm concerned about today is called the Pathogen Access and Benefit Sharing System, which is something people have never heard of, the Pathogen Access and Benefit Sharing System. And this is a reason that even though the United States has withdrawn from the World Health Organization, that it's still going to affect us, because this Pathogen Access and Benefit Sharing System, believe it or not, under this system, the World Health Organization is encouraging countries, mostly developing countries, to go out into their jungles or go out wherever they can find a pathogen with pandemic potential. In other words, a pathogen that could cause a pandemic. And instead of leaving it out in the jungle, they would bring it in and send it to the World Health Organization, which would then send it out to all kinds of other labs worldwide, ostensibly to create a vaccine for it. But in the meantime, spreading these deadly pathogens, you know, worldwide greatly increases the chances of lab leaks and also of these deadly pathogens falling into the hands of bioterrorists, enemies of the United States or enemies of some other country. You know, I know Israel is really worried about this. And so greatly increases the chance that we will be in a state of chronic pandemic. And that's going to affect the United States, because pathogens, germs, they know no boundaries. It doesn't matter whether we are in the World Health Organization or not, we are still going to get sick from these pathogens. And it's going to, number one, give countries that are so inclined the pretext upon which to deny people their human rights, you know, like what happened under COVID. And it's also going to greatly enrich big pharma. So I think that this whole pathogen access and benefit sharing system is a disaster.
Mm. And we've seen just how much governments like to flex their totalitarian muscles. And It could be something way worse than COVID. At least with COVID, you know, you could still defy government rules and mandates and dictates without actually facing any major health consequences, by and large. But some of these pathogens, you know, if you ignore what the government says, you could die real easy.
Well, this is the thing, is that the worse the pathogen, you know, the worse it's going to be if there's a lab leak. So, but although one thing that a scientist was saying that makes a lot of sense is if the pathogen is really super deadly, like it has, you know, a 90% fatality rate, it's not going to spread very far because it's going to kill its victims before it can spread. So that's one thing to keep in mind when you start hearing about all these, you know, terrible death rates and all of that. But anyway, this PABS system is the most controversial section of the new pandemic treaty. And so they weren't even able to agree on it. Like they passed the treaty saying, you know, we don't know what the details are going to be of the PAB system. And so it's going to be included in an annex to be voted on this coming year in the World Health Assembly. So they, you know, sort of, and they just they closed comments. They only allowed comments by the countries themselves to comment on the PAB system. We need there to be open comments from everyone. That there needs to be a public comment section so that you and I and the listeners can comment on this. So that's something that we're going to be pressing for.
Yeah, it doesn't really seem like the World Health Organization would be welcoming the feedback from the population. It's just rather the people in power who would be happy to abuse that power.
Well, that's right. And so the thing is that we are trying to raise awareness around the world. I'm going to be going to Estonia in early September to speak at the Estonian Parliament to a European-wide conference on issues relating to the World Health Organization. I'm going to be talking about the PAB system and launching a worldwide campaign to stop it. Because if we can stop, if we can make it so that they can't agree on the annex, then we can stop this PAB system. So that's one of my goals. But there are other things that are also wrong with this pandemic treaty. So, for example, the pandemic treaty requires nations to prevent misinformation and disinformation. So that's censorship. And this is not even censorship afterwards. It isn't even like, you posted something on YouTube and then YouTube shuts it down. This is preventing it from coming out to begin with. So that is, and what is misinformation and disinformation? Misinformation and disinformation is anything that, you know, that disagrees with the World Health Organization narrative. So that, for example, in the beginning of COVID, when the World Health Organization was parroting the Chinese Communist Party lie that there was no human-to-human transmission, if you were a doctor or a scientist and you said, you know what, there is human-to-human transmission, they would have called that misinformation and disinformation, even though it was true, just because it disagreed with what the World Health Organization was saying. So this is very, very dangerous.
Yeah, and also would infect what kind of research is being done, because if they have a certain narrative about it, then how do you do any research that actually, if it goes against the narrative and is factually necessary to treat the virus? You can't.
Exactly. And so what that is it's not following the science. It's destroying the science, because science thrives on disagreement, you know? You say there's no human-to-human transmission. I say there is. Let's have a discussion instead of just shutting me down and saying, you know, I'm going to revoke your license to practice law to practice medicine or whatever. You know, that. So this is censorship. It's built into the pandemic treaty. And also, oh, I hear the music. Are we out of time?
Yeah, we're just about out of time. We got about 30 seconds left, so just enough time to tell our listeners where they can find out more information.
Okay. Go to antiglobalist.net, antiglobalist, one word, .net. Sign our manifesto, and you will be in touch with me. You will be put on our electronic email newsletter. I will keep you informed of actions that you can take.
All right, Reggie Littlejohn, appreciate you being on the Silk Road Joe Show. And listeners, appreciate you all tuning in. And, of course, our website is mainstreetradionetwork.com. You can go check that out, because we are done with you all for today. And go check out her website as well, which is probably much more important than ours. Be seeing you.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the host, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. So please, consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-719-0433 or at our website, mainstreetradionetwork.com.